Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
America faces a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas sounding the alarm on FEMA funding right after the devastation of Hurricane Helene. Listen.
We are meeting the immediate needs with the money that we have. We are expecting another hurricane hitting. We do not have the funds. FEMA does not have the funds to make it through the season.
This all comes as the Biden-Harris administration spent over $1 billion from a FEMA program on services for migrants.
Well, folks, there's two mysteries solved. The first one being, where are these illegal immigrants getting all this money? We found out from the Center for Immigration Studies that only half of illegal immigrant adults even have jobs, yet they seem to have cars and clothes and places to stay. It's a real mystery. You knew they were being funded, and now we know how. Massive expenditures from FEMA, which is supposed to help Americans in natural disasters. And that other weird mystery used to be in America up till recently, whenever there was a natural disaster, the politicians, Republican and Democrat alike, would beat a path to get there, to get on the ground, accuse the other guy of not really caring, went on for days. They got great PR. But all of a sudden, the Biden administration isn't interested in going at all and wants to clearly downplay these natural disasters. And it happened in East Palestine. There was that big chemical release. I just assumed it was because it's a Republican area and they don't care. But then it happened in Lahaina in Hawaii, that terrible fire. That's a Democrat area, but they still didn't care. Remember Joe Biden had to be shamed and bullied into going there? Remember him sitting on the beach? He wouldn't even interrupt his vacation as people burned alive. And remember the reporters screaming at Biden on the beach because he's on vacation. Hey, do you care, Lahaina? What are you going to do? And he just ignores them, right? They want it to go away. Now it's happening again in Asheville. I mean, they're the president and the vice president. It's almost a week it took for Kamala Harris to hit the ground. They let Trump go first. I guess figuring the media would black him out. Why do that? Especially 30 days from an election. It was bizarre. Why do that? Why communicate to American people, especially in a swing state like North Carolina, your disdain for them? A third of the state is suffering. And you can't be bothered to go. You don't even cancel your fundraiser. Biden doesn't even cancel his vacation. Now, it makes sense. It makes sense. If they go there, their sheeple will notice. It'll get more attention. They'll have to spend more money they can't spend on illegals. In fact, it seems they're almost out of money, if you listen to Alejandro Mayorkas. Well, now we know why they are broke, why FEMA is on track to run out of money, why they can't even pay to help Americans, Mayorkas says, if there's another hurricane and hurricane season isn't over. It's because they've been diverting money to something called the Emergency Food and Shelter Program inside of FEMA. It's supposed to be for Americans, but instead, it is now being used as a program to resettle migrants. This makes so much sense. Folks, they couldn't send planes to get to people of Asheville. But Her Highness has the money, the wherewithal somehow to fly 500,000 Haitians in here and dump them in mostly red areas. Yeah, this explains the whole thing. This explains why those Haitians immediately were able to turn around. And despite not having on average a high school diploma or even being fluent in this language, suddenly able to buy cars, even though they don't have jobs. It all makes sense. The Shelter and Services Program has become a refugee relocation program. And in just 2023, they spent $1.1 billion on shelter for migrants, food for migrants, all the extras, cribs, baby formula, whatever they need. Some of the money even went into those cash cards they were giving out in New York, you know, with a limit of $18,000 per family. Meanwhile, on top of the $1.1 billion, there's another $685 million that has been funded, allocated to fund illegal immigrants in a separate program. I actually interviewed a FEMA representative today, and she said, well, those are two separate programs from the one that funds the rescue activity in Asheville. True. But if you're out of money in the fund for the rescue one, well, can't you take a $1.1 billion from the other funds? They've never been used for illegals before. This shift began back in November 2023, according to America First Legal, who has all the receipts. I'll put the links in the podcast description. They call it Achieving Equitable Recovery. It puts equity and diversity ahead of actually helping people. That then allows them to use their racial equity agenda to resettle and support millions of illegal immigrants within the U.S. And what they've been doing with these billions is handing them to state governments, but also these liberal nonprofits who then use it for all kinds of goodies for the illegals, including paying housing, paying for migrant shelters. Just to give you an example of just a couple of allocations here, this is outrageous, okay? Like, if you were wondering, how are illegals affording to stay in the $300, $400 a night hotels in New York? This program pays for that. Here's another one. It's a grant from FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency. Again, they're only supposed to help Americans in natural disasters. But it gave $106 million to the New York City Office of Management and Budget to run a migrant shelter. Here's another one. This one, $145 million. Another grant to New York City for assistance to illegal immigrants. This, folks, as New York Post reported, 75% of the arrests now in Midtown Manhattan aren't even Americans. They're illegal immigrants. I bet you every one of them is walking around with this cash. And a lot of them are sleeping in migrant shelters paid for with money that should be helping people out in Western North Carolina right now, then in Lahaina and in East Palestine. Florida Congressmember Corey Mills has actually been up in Asheville helping people stranded. He and his team are actually going deep into the hills trying to find these people.
You know, are you working with your private organization that you're part of? And what do you see in terms of federal help happening? Tell us the difference.
So that's really where the missing piece is the federal piece. And again, let's go ahead and point out the obvious, which is that FEMA had utilized a large majority of the personnel who should be here taking care of this to be replaced or repurposed, if you will, for immigration resettlement when we need to be focusing on Americans and what's going on, whether it be in Maui, Palestine, Ohio, Florida, North Carolina, or Tennessee. But I'm actually working with great organizations like Mercury One, charity for Glenn Beck, Universal Air, as well as for Sentinel Foundation and so many others. This is a group project where Americans are coming together to answer the call for Americans when the federal government fails to act.
Folks, you're almost watching a new country form here. I mean, when Ron DeSantis has to send help from Florida up to help us here in North Carolina because Joe Biden is literally on vacation, what is it? This, you're watching a regional block form. We can't depend on the federal government. They discriminate against us anyway. This is how a federal country that consists of about 12 states operates. 12 states that used to be the United States of America. Corey Mills wasn't the only one who's shocked. So was Georgia Governor Brian Kemp when he found out the government wasn't going to have much money for Georgia. They got hardcore flooded from Atlanta up.
When the first emergency declarations came down, there was only 11 counties in that. A lot of people were outraged, including me, because there was such devastation in you know, up to 90 counties. So we called the White House. We spoke to the president's chief of staff, the FEMA administrator, and said, look, you're sending the signal that you're not paying attention to some of these rural communities.
Finally, Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody says they've been trying to warn the rest of the country about this for a while.
Everyone should be waking up this morning outraged. This is not something that has just happened recently, and Florida's been warning about this since this administration took over. Mayorkas has come in like a virus and infected these what need to be healthy, strong, fundamental programs to ensure the stability and safety of Americans in times of disaster. So you heard, They have taken the FEMA Emergency Food and Shelter Program and over time siphoned off hundreds of millions of dollars into basically making it an illegal immigrant resettlement program. And so when you see these states and cities around the nation declaring emergencies, even blue states, because of what this administration has done, encouraging more and more and more, developing programs to encourage more and more and more people to come here, the government, Biden and Harris, are having to fund that on the backs of the American people. And now, right now, when Florida, North Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, all of these states are hurting because of this truly natural disaster, not a Biden-Harris-made disaster, they're saying we need more money. And of course they need more money because they've been laundering it from the true intended purpose of this fund that Congress set forth. Laws be damned.
Now that comes on top of the national scandal from earlier in this week when we learned that 13,000 illegal immigrant murderers and 15,000 illegal immigrant rapists and sex abusers, all of them convicted, are currently loose, wandering around in the United States of America. Got some more information on that. That broke beginning of the week. And here's the thing. Those crimes were all committed in the U.S. after these illegal immigrants arrived. The data, listen to this, does not include convictions for crimes committed in other countries. But that's because the Border Patrol does not even have access to that data. So we're talking about illegal immigrant rapists, murderers. They come from other countries. Border Patrol has no way to know. They can't know. Now, under Trump, we did used to know because they had to stay in Mexico under the Remain in Mexico policy. And a federal agency called USCIS checked as part of their immigration application. Well, Joe Biden scuttled that program. USCIS has access to the data, but Border Patrol doesn't. They're flying literally blind. So, in other words, all these people who are resettling, giving all this money to, they could be murderers, rapists from other countries, terrorists maybe. The other scandal that emerged this week, of the 8 million illegals on ICE's non-detained docket, that means they're just running free in America. Again, Trump used to keep them in Mexico. They're running free in America. Of the 8 million, 1.3 million of them are already under what's called final orders of removal. A judge has said, no, you've got no claim. You can't stay. You got to go. They were ordered removed. But why haven't they been removed? Well, the Biden administration has decreed that unless they committed a serious crime, they can't be removed. But what if they commit burglary, endangering a minor, drunk driving? That, no big deal. They can stay. Those offenses are not considered serious enough for their removal by the Biden administration. Wait, but don't they have judges' deportation orders? Yeah, but they're meaningless if the administration won't act. Want to pause here to thank our sponsor, PhD Weight Loss, for the 29 pounds I lost in 6 months and the now 21 months I've kept it off. I want to thank them for the fact that my knee pain is gone and I was able to take a 10-day hiking trip with my daughter to Utah that I'll never forget. I want to thank them for my new bucket list because I'm a hiker. And before, I could only hike the trails rated moderate on alltrails.com. Well, now I can do the strenuous ones she's always wanted to do now that my knees have healed. And it turns out I don't have arthritis. It just was too much weight on my knees. So we have a whole new bucket list of hikes we can do here on the East Coast. I'm so grateful for the memories that we'll make. What will your surprises be when you lose all the weight you want on PhD Weight Loss and you keep it off? Why not find out? Go to myphdweightloss.com. That's myphdweightloss.com. You can do it from any state in the nation, myphdweightloss.com. Finally, in a sign that the media is still losing it, cracking up over how badly J.D. Vance whooped Tim Walz, they went after him for his beard, pointing out that he's the first White House wannabe to have facial hair in 80 years. And since research, I guess, shows that beards are more masculine, he's wrong for wearing one. What? They write, that can be positive to some, reading as strength and competence, but to others, especially women, it can be negative, conveying aggression in opposition to feminist ideal. It's just a beer. Jeez. Anyway, you know what's so crazy about that? They wasted so much time on J.D. Vance's beard, but this house organ of the Beltway, Politico, never got around to the other supposed feminist icon. Doug Emhoff, you know, the husband of Kamala Harris, slapping around his ex-girlfriend in 2012. The New York Post, the UK Daily Mail have the story. And at the time, they haven't found witnesses yet to this. He supposedly did it while he was in line at Cannes. But three girlfriends of hers, she contacted, called one of them, emailed the other, talking about the fact that he'd hit her. And they still have that data. So, I mean, the media was all over that. I mean, can you imagine the first gentleman potentially beating the president of the United States if Kamala Harris is elected? By the way, he was reportedly jealous that, you know, he thought she kind of flirted with a security guard. Can you imagine if three of Melania's friends came forward with evidence that Trump beat her, or just, hey, she told us he beats her all the time? Even liberal Chris Cuomo couldn't take it. He's a liberal, formerly with CNN. He's on News Nation now.
If the name were Trump instead of Emhoff, it would be all over the news. Daily Mail, echoed by the New York Post, has a story. Doug Emhoff, Kamala Harris's husband, accused of striking a woman he was on a date with at the Cannes Film Festival back in 2012. They had been drinking, and he didn't like how she talked to the valet. He smacked her. She smacked him back.
You do not get very often people coming forward named. And the reason is they're worried about retaliation. These are very powerful people we're talking about. Three friends all saying they were told the same thing. Two of them contemporaneously. This woman, Jane, we're calling her, she called one of the friends immediately after the incident. That's what this friend told me.
Ordinarily, I don't care about these stories. You could say, well, there may have been an assault. Maybe. Well, she didn't go to the police. He's not really running. But again, if it were Trump or anyone related to him, it would be on every TV show that is on right now.
Especially since Doug Emhoff, remember, was everywhere for redefining masculinity. Here's former White House spokeshack Circleback Saki interviewing him on MSNBC.
An interesting part of how people have talked about your role here is how your role has reshaped the perception of masculinity. And I'm not sure you planned on that, but you are an incredibly supportive spouse. Has that been an evolution for you? And do you think that's part of the role you might play as first gentleman?
It's funny. I've started to think a lot about this. I've always been like this. My dad was like this. And
Emhoff, by the way, once went off on Trump for being a misogynist.
Two guys who actually not only don't trust women, but are literally running on a platform of authoritarianism and misogyny. That literally should be their slogan, because that's what it is. So you want, you know, people who literally are outwardly misogynistic in their policies and the way they talk about women and the policies in which they've already enacted and have talked about enacting. Or Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. It's completely binary.
This is the same Doug Emhoff, by the way, whose marriage broke up after he had an affair with his kid's nanny and knocked her up, then pressured her to get the abortion. Fantastic guy. But anyway, all this, as Cuomo said, is being blacked out by the media while they focus on J.D. Vance's misogynistic word.
Battleground America with Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.